victory. It's the Book of the Week.
Good morning. It's Thursday morning. It's Book Club Day. Welcome to the Portsmouth Authors Collective Book Club. It's me, Magic Matt, and this morning with me, I've got Nick Morris, who's going to be chatting to Jane Andreoli about her new publication, Consider the Cicada. We've then also got some information for you about writing folk tales, fables and myths. And of course, it wouldn't be a book club if I didn't start the day off with a little poem. So I've got one this morning called Keep Going by Kate Summers. When failures come, keep going. When you feel like giving up, keep going. When people mock your idea, keep going. When challenges you face, keep going. When mistakes are made, learn, but keep going. Because perseverance just keeps going. And with that, I'm going to hand over to Nick.
Thanks, Matt. And thanks very much for the poem. I just mentioned that Victory Radio's doing their 50th anniversary short story and now poetry competition this year. And with me today is Jane Andreoli. Hello, Jane.
Hello, Nick.
Jane Andreoli reached the top 10 of the Victory Radio writing competition last year for a story based on the song Baker Street. She's always loved writing, but only started taking it seriously in 2020. Jane's work is in two Paracom Prize anthologies. It's in the Pens of the Earth publication, Wild Seas, Wilder Cities, and she won the 2022 Du Maurier Festival Short Story Award. Her first book is called Consider the Cicada. It's a collection of 18 stories about ghosts, the supernatural and the weird. Jane has invented fables, dabbled in folklore and re-examined myths. Some stories are frightening, some are sad, and some will make you laugh out loud. She loves a twisted ending, so nothing is ever quite what it seems. So Jane, a brilliant title, Consider the Cicada. Where did that come from?
Well, the cicada is an amazing insect. And when I first heard about its life cycle, I was really, really interested because it lives underground for 17 years. And for 17 years, all it knows is darkness. Inside is rotting log. It doesn't know that there's light. It doesn't know that it can fly or anything. And then it metamorphoses, becomes into this chrysalis. And after 17 years, all the cicadas fly together and they're gone. And I was attracted by the thought that the cicada had no way of knowing what was happening to it when it began to pupate, because none of the wind insects would ever return to tell their siblings that there was, in fact, an afterlife. And I began to think about that and the symptoms of dementia. I've lost some cousins and some friends to dementia. It'd be great to believe that it was a transition to a new awareness, the brain dissolving and reforming into something infinitely more powerful. Although Cicada is quite a nasty story. Once I had my innocent protagonist inside that house with no way to summon help, I just couldn't resist it.
Yes, I have read the story, and you're right.
Did it give you nightmares?
Yeah, it didn't, but it's definitely creepy, if not creepy crawly. What draws you to writing about the supernatural and folklore and so on?
I love the fact that you can make anything happen. If you can imagine it, you can create a world where it exists and where it has power. And it's so many books I read when I was a child. I read voraciously as a child, but all about the supernatural. I mean, C.S. Lewis's Wardrobe, Into Narnia, all the Mary Poppins books. Before Disney got hold of them and made them more pink and wholesome, they had this kind of subtle edge of menace. You were never quite sure what was going to happen next. And of course, Tolkien. Who can resist the world of Tolkien? And some of the more niche ones, there was this amazing story called The Giant Under the Snow by John Gordon. And it's a brilliant adventure story where children find a Celtic buckle that wakes a sleeping giant, but also arouses his evil enemies. And there was one chapter that mesmerised me where the children are given backpacks that turn into wings so they can literally fly away from the danger. And then, of course, there's all this thing about parallel worlds. There's a book called The Fair to Middling by Arthur Calder Marshall. I loved that story as a child. And there's a scenario where an innocent fairground can lure you in and offer curious life-changing prizes, but at a cost you might not be willing to pay. And the idea that the step from this world into somewhere utterly strange and dangerous might be through something as flimsy as a tent flap stayed with me. You've got Philip Pullman using that idea amazingly in The Subtle Knife, where literally a blade cuts an entrance into a parallel world. And then you've got Terry Pratchett, who debunks the whole thing. And trolls, werewolves, dwarves, vampires, all the goblins become this amazing, brilliantly dysfunctional society. And he's the master of the twisted ending. So basically, a mishmash of all of that just hooked me on folklore.
Right, yeah, I think we've read quite a lot of the same books, Jane. I think that's definitely true. I think that's a good time for a break.
Well, I think that sounds like a good idea, Nick. How about we go for a bit of the Atlanta Rhythm section and Spooky?
Welcome back, and we're talking to Jane Andreoli about her book, Consider the Cicada. So you talked about Terry Pratchett's story twists, and you like a good twist. So,
I do.
So what does make a good twist in a story, short story particularly?
I think the whole idea that the thing you are running towards, what you believe is the safe place, is not the safe place. The thing you're running from might be the thing that is actually going to save you. That danger comes as a kind of sideways swipe. And that also you can leave the flap of the tent flap, if you like, going back to Arthur Calder Marshall, you can leave that flapping so you're not quite sure what the real world and the supernatural world, which is which. I actually do this in one of my stories, which is called Let Me Out, where a child appears to be a captive in this house, and it's all beautiful and her grandfather loves her and all the rest of it, but she's actually a captive. But then you realise that the end is twisted at the end, that she was a captive for a reason, a good reason. We see into what we refer to as the real world, but I leave the door open. So then we see back into what appears to be the supernatural world. For a moment, we see both of them together. And that kind of alters our perception of what's real and what isn't.
One of the stories that struck me in that, mm-hmm. in the book is The Fire Dancer.
Yes.
And it's set in Hawaii. I'm kind of assuming you've been to Hawaii.
I have, and it was brilliant.
And I just wondered, is this based on a Hawaiian folk tale?
It's a fable I created for myself after reading up a little bit about the Hawaiian goddess Pele. In 2019, I had the trip of a lifetime to America, which culminated in spending a week on Hawaii. So we'd been to the Grand Canyon, we'd been to the Painted Desert, we'd seen these amazing solid places of the earth, and then suddenly I was staying on this wonderful island, Maui, which is like a tiny crust over all these volcanoes surrounded by the sea. And I thought how fragile the entire ecosystem was there, and it's so very beautiful. And the idea that this wonderful place could be destroyed in an instant as the volcanoes erupted just took my breath away, because I wondered how the islanders could carry on from day to day knowing that this kind of threat was underneath them. So I invented my own fable. And the goddess Pele rouses the volcanoes when she's awake, and she realises yet again how lonely and isolated she is, because she's an immortal in the mortal world. And then the guardian of the island wakes up the fire dancer from his sleep to appease her. So it's a story of love and sacrifice, and it's basically started me off writing stories for pleasure. So I'm actually very fond of that story. It started the whole thing.
Yeah, certainly a really striking story. So you obviously love writing short stories.
I do, yes.
Have you ever considered writing longer fiction or anything like that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I don't know how you do it, all you authors that turn out these massive great tomes. I suppose, in a sense, I think of the short stories being like painting a picture, because I do love art as well as writing. And so far, all I've really managed is these like word pictures. I'm not dismissing the idea that I might want to write something longer, but so far I'm just really loving the short story form. You can just pack a punch with it and you can twist it around, and you can leave the door open to someone's imagination, just leave them wanting a little bit more. I just love it.
So do you have any more short stories on the way? Are we expecting a new book?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Only these are probably are not going to be spooky stories. I've put all those into the first collection. These are going to be stories, crime, murder, village life. The kind of stories that just might get me tarred and feathered on the village green.
So where could people buy your first book then? Where can they buy Consider the Cicada?
It's available on Amazon, and a small number of them are also available at Denby Community Centre. And that's where you'll find me.
Excellent. Thank you, Jane.
Yes, time for some more music. And this time we've got a song actually chosen by Jane. I actually wondered whether you'd chosen this just to see if I could pronounce his name. We've got Over the Rainbow. But it's actually by Israel Kamakavivaole. There, you're surprised, aren't you? I managed to say it. But why did you choose that particular song?
I first heard it when we went to a luau on Maui. And the luau was this wonderful evening of traditional Hawaiian dancing. And if you can imagine, the sun is going down. There's this wonderful long twilight, the boats sailing past. And we're all getting ready for this night of feasting and dancing. It's very warm. And over the loudspeakers comes this beautiful, beautiful version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And that seemed to encapsulate everything that was magical for me about the Hawaiian Islands, the mystery, the beauty, and the poetry of it all. And it just stuck in my mind.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Jane Andreoli, and I thought we'd discuss what it takes to write a folk tale or a fable or a myth. And yeah, Jane, what does make a good folk tale?
Well, for a start, there's got to be jeopardy. You've got this lovely little enclosed society, everything's ticking along, absolutely wonderful, and there's something. Boom, something happens. There's a giant or a troll or an evil witch or a wizard is causing mayhem. And this can be something as petty as good looks, like Snow White poisoned because a mirror tells the queen she's no longer the fairest in the realm, or as devastating as a greedy giant trampling all over the crops and eating the livestock. But basically something nasty and foreign is spoiling our way of life and must be destroyed. So that's a bit xenophobic. But that's basically your starting point. And then there's got to be a journey. You've got to have a hero, and the hero needs to find what he needs to destroy the enemy. And there are all sorts of things which the hero has to get over in order to be strong enough to take this on. And I love the way that some authors have twisted this bit around, because the hero's got to be tested and tempered, and has got to face challenges that are uniquely terrifying and difficult for him. And Terry Pratchett, one of his little heroes called Rob Anybody, the leader of the We Free Men, he's all up there with his guns and his swords, and he's up for anything, and he's asked how to spell marmalade. And it nearly is the finish of him, because that's the one thing he didn't expect. So it's this kind of thing. You've got to face challenges which are uniquely terrifying to you. At the end of that, the status quo is then maintained, and they all lived happily ever after.
Ah, very good. So, I mean, in your book, you've adapted some in existing folklore, but is that easier, or is it easier to write your own story?
I think both are equally easy, because if you take an existing folk tale, then you've already got the structure and the main characters, and then you just have to bring it in the modern times. You just have to see how it would fit. In my story, for example, I Will Always Love You, a siren is found out at sea, and it all goes wrong for her, because instead of a lovesick fisherman perishing on the rocks, overcome by her beauty and her song, she's unfortunately hauled ashore by a tone-deaf man who's also gay. So I challenge the assumption that every sailor is a red-blooded heterosexual with perfect pitch, but you have to read the story to find out what happens. So that's one where I've taken an existing fable that I've mucked around with it. But I do love creating my own, and there's two in there, the fire dancer I've already talked about. But The Winter Crown is a fable which is completely my own invention, and I love the freedom of that. I didn't have to bend any facts to fit. I could just make my own stage set and put my characters to play in it. But there is a style of language that seems to fit, because it's a bit like building a stage set. You set out the parameters. Maybe the trees can talk. Maybe every child is born knowing one unique magic spell. There are flying unicorns. Whatever the parameters are, you state them as facts, light them up, and invite your audience to suspend its disbelief and step inside. But having built this world, you can also destroy its credibility, which is the interesting part. And you can leave the curtain flapping. You can show two worlds at once and challenge the reader to tell which one is real. Just moving away from literature for a minute, there's a wonderful episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I love, and it's called Normal Again. And in this, Buffy's enemies give her a drug that makes her believe that her life of fighting demons is nothing but a hallucination. And she seems to wake up, and there are her beloved parents wanting to take her home. And she has to choose which vision to accept. And the viewer's obviously saying, come on, make the right choice, carry on being a superhero. And at the 11th hour, she sacrifices this vision of a happy, normal life with her parents and goes back to what we, the viewer, think is her real life. And then the backstage curtain is twitched because we cut to the hospital ward and her mother crying in the arms of her father, we've lost her again. So it's fun to leave that curtain flapping. I leave it flapping slightly in my story, Martha and the Cherub, because I wanted a clear collision between the real world and a supernatural world. Those are the kind of things that attract me to fables, that you can do so much with them.
Yeah, thank you. And I love Buffy too, so that's great. Let's have a break
not just
there.
Me then.
Yeah, let's have a break.
Okay, well, as tempting as it is to put a piece of music in from Buffy, perhaps not. So instead, what I thought we'd do is go with a bit of Fleetwood Mac, and this is Rhiannon.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Jane Andreoli about writing folk tales, fables and myths. And Jane, so a lot of really original folk tales, or the Grimm tales and so on, they are pretty grim. They're a lot darker than the modern versions that you'd see
in books
or films.
Yes.
So is it necessary, do you think, to change those original tales for a modern audience?
Oh, now that is a real hard one. I don't approve of cancel culture, that's for sure. And I, you know, because we should look history squarely in the face and acknowledge everything that's gone on there. But having said that, I recently reread some of Grimm's fairy tales and could not believe just how disgusting and awful they actually are. I mean, if you think about it, you've got Hansel and Gretel, and the parents don't have enough food for them, so they just take them out of the forest and abandon them. On your way, kids. You know, and they find this gingerbread cottage so they can basically eat the walls and risk type 2 diabetes. That's fair enough. And then the wicked witch, whose cottage it is, who's quite justifiably a bit annoyed by this, takes umbrage. And what do? They shut her in her own oven. I mean, is that any way for a child to behave? And also consider some of the punishments meted out in folktales. There's one where a witch is made to wear red hot shoes. So that these are awful, dreadful folktales. In a way, so there is an argument to say that it's almost like immunising children against terror. But I really don't think that they have that big a place in modern life. I think we should be more humane in what we write about. And folktales so often carry the underlying message that change is wrong and change is dangerous. The status quo must be maintained. The stranger must be feared. The wrong tracks through the woods must be avoided. So basically it's playing on our paranoia. It's fostering that. So although I love the format and tradition, I think they need to grow and change to fit modern times. It's not about dumbing things down. It's about making them more relevant and about making them less of a closed box, making them more of an adventure.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And, you know, so are there any sort of modern folk tales and mythology that you recommend, or ancient or modern, actually?
Authors that I recommend, well, one I love is by Douglas Adams, The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul. One of my favourite books ever. I've actually got it on tape read by Douglas Adams, and it's a treat I regularly dip back into. And that's all about the Norse gods, who, of course, because they're immortal, they're still living in modern times, and how they're coping with modern times, how they're coping with the mass disbelief of people. It's a brilliant book. I recommend it to everyone. And then there's this wonderful Rivers of London series by Ben Aronovich. The premise of that is that it's a police procedural. But basically, every river in London and all over the country has got its own god or goddess. And these gods and goddesses, obviously being immortal, are still having a stake in modern life and causing problems, as are a lot of other immortal criminals, really. I mean, Mr. Punch is a big criminal. And this poor man, the protagonist, starts his career as being an ordinary policeman and ends up being sequestered to a special part of the police division which deals with supernatural crimes. A wonderful series, thoroughly recommended. And of course, you can't go wrong without reading Terry Pratchett. You can't go far without reading Terry Pratchett. And everything that he ever wrote, I think, is wonderful. I absolutely love that man. I mourned the day he died. But the way he would take myths, legends, folk tales, the mores in modern life, he'd take on the Phantom of the Opera, for example, and he would just cheerfully debunk the whole lot and just make it so funny. And then suddenly he could twist it around and come up with wonderful lines that express humanity. I mean, there's that wonderful line that Death comes out with, where he describes being human as being the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape. I wouldn't be all have given her eye teeth to write that one.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, marvellous man.
Thanks for that, Jane. That's absolutely excellent. And I'll certainly be looking out for your book, Consider the Cicada. And thanks for talking to us about fables and folk tales.
Well, thanks very much. It's been great fun. Thank you.
We have a few events coming up. The first one, and most importantly, is the Victory Radio 50th Anniversary Short Story and Poetry Competition. So write a short story of 400 words or a poem of 30 lines maximum using the theme Victory. And the entry window is open on the 1st of May through to the 31st of May. We also have a Portsmouth Author Collective stall at Love's South Sea Spring Fair at Portsmouth Cathedral this time, and that's on the 12th of April, Saturday the 12th. There's the Speak Volumes at the Hideaway Cafe in Southsea on the 23rd, and there's another pack book sale at the Jack House Gallery in Old Portsmouth on the 3rd of May.
Yep, and that is all the time we've got this week on the Book Club. Don't forget, if you want to get in contact with us, we've got an email address, and that's bookclub@victoryonline.co.uk. And I'd quite like to hear from anybody who's got some short little poems I could use at the start of the programme, actually, because I'm starting to build up a nice little collection. But until next week, thank you very much for listening, and I'm going to hand you over to Patrick's capable hands for some more fantastic music.